Last week we spoke a little bit about the preliminary ideas of how important, how essential a Beis HaKnesses is in all of our lives. I just wanted to make a comment about that while we're talking about that topic, and that is the Gemara Maseches Megillah, Daf Chav Ches Amud Beis, writes, in the same sugya that's talking about the kavod that we're supposed to give to a Beis HaKnesses, the Gemara then says that it's Asur Lehishtamish B'mi Sheshona Halachos. We're not allowed to, Lehishtamish means to use. It's not the right usage here, but it means we're not allowed to take services from somebody who is a Shona Halachos. And this is Paskin Lehalacha in the Ramah, that if you have a Talmud Chacham, you're not allowed to use a Talmud Chacham to do your jobs for you. And that I see as being a connection to this whole sugya. If you're not allowed to use a shul for your own purposes, and you're not allowed to eat and drink in the shul because you cannot make the shul a mundane part of your life, then certainly a Talmud Chacham, who's a human being, who's deserving of respect more than a shul, so then certainly we would say that you're not allowed to be mishtamish with him. So much so, some Achronim even say, if you have a Rebbe, and he has some of his Talmidim that are great Talmid Chachamim, obviously he's greater than they are because he's the Rebbe, but still, many Achronim say that the Rebbe would not even be allowed to use his own Talmidim to his own benefit, which is a big chiddush. But it's known, it's told that Rebbe Kiva Eger, when he needed a sefer from one of the bookshelves while he was in the middle of shir, he would never ask one of the students to go because he was choshish, he was concerned, maybe the Gemara includes even his own Talmidim. Rebbe Kiva Eger was greater than all the Talmidim put together. Still, Rebbe Kiva Eger felt it was not appropriate for him to use his Talmidim because of this Gemara. And I think that that's relevant to everything we've been talking about. A Beis HaKnesses deserves kavod. There's a certain way that we have to behave with the Beis HaKnesses, and Talmidei Chachamim also. We have to be careful that we treat them with the right kind of respect that they are deserving of as well. It's interesting, the Gemara Maseches Makos has a famous comment that how foolish people are, de mekame, mekame gavar rabba, v'la mekame, mekame, I'm sorry, that they stand up in front of a Sefer Torah when we take a Sefer Torah out of the Yaron, but when a gavar rabba comes into the room, when a great Talmud Chacham walks in, they don't stand up. So the Gemara seems to say that the kavod that is deserving of a Talmud Chacham is even greater than that of a Sefer Torah. That's what the Gemara says. How do you know that? So the Gemara says because the Pasuk says, Arba'im Yakenu, the Pasuk says you should give 40 lashes to a person who violates an Aveira. And then along came the Chachamim, the Gavra Rabba, the Talmud Chacham came along and he said, nah, Torah doesn't really mean it. When it says 40, it doesn't really mean 40. It means 39. Who do you think you are? Talmud Chacham could come along and change a Pasuk in Chumash? Obviously, what it means, says the Gemara, is a Talmud Chacham has more power than the Pasuk in Chumash itself. That's what the Gemara says. And therefore, how foolish people are that they stand up when you have a Sefer Torah that comes out of the Aron Kodesh and is being brought around the shul, and they don't stand up when the Talmud Chacham comes into the room. So there's an interesting story that's told about the Ostrovsk Rebbe. I don't know much about him. He was one of the great Talmud Chachamim in Lita, in Europe. And the story goes that many of the great tzaddikim in Europe used to go take vacations in, I think it was Marienbad. I think there was some forest there. Everybody used to go there. So there are a lot of great stories about what happened in the forest there. I don't know how many of them are true. But the story here goes that the Ostrovsky Rebbe was once there together with one of the great gedolim, I think with Reb Chaim Moser. And they were each talking to each other. They were each excited about the opportunity they would have to talk to one another. And one turns to the other and he says, you know, I'd like you to be mechubed with the first Dvar Torah. He says, no. You're the Rebbe. No, you're the Rosh Hashiva. You're the Gadol Hador. Back and forth, back and forth. Finally, he says, "Nu, you're a Gavra Rabba. You say the first Dvar Torah." He says, "Huh? You're calling me a Gavra Rabba? I'll tell you a Dvar Torah. What does it mean to be a Gavra Rabba?" See, the Gemara says over here how great a Talmud Chacham is, how great a Gavra Rabba is. That's the way the Gemara refers to a Talmud Chacham. It says how great a Gavra Rabba is because what's the proof? Because we know the Torah says you give 40 lashes, and instead we only do 39. So the Ostrovsky Rebbe asked a very obvious question, and that is, why does the Torah have to wait until Parshas Kisetze to prove the power of a Talmud Chacham? Where do we have this earlier? Much earlier in the Torah. Where? No, Mishpatim doesn't say it. Parshas Emor, when we talk about Sfiras HaOmer, so it says, Sfartim Lechem Melachos HaShabbos, Tisperu Chamishim Yom. And there we know, we don't count 50 days, we count 49. So why did the Gemara bring a proof from Parshas Kisetze, when it talks about Malkus, when it says 40 and really means 39, why not bring a proof to the Koach of a Talmud Chacham from Sfiras HaOmer? What does it say about Sfiras HaOmer? Supposed to count 50 days, we only do 49. So he answered as follows. What does it mean to be a Gavra Rabba? What does it mean to be a great Jewish leader, a great Talmud Chacham? It means you're smarter than everybody else. The Torah says 49, and really 50, it really means 49. Yeah, anyone could do that. What's the big deal? So you're a Talmud Chacham, you know a lot, that's not a Talmud Chacham. A Gavra Rabba means when you have somebody who gets Hasra, which means somebody's about to do an Avera. Right before he does the Avera, we go and we warn that individual, if you violate the Avera, we're going to give you Malkus. And we have to tell them exactly what they're violating. And they have to respond within Tochi de Dibur, Afal Pikin Ani Yoseh. The Gemara says they know clearly what they're doing is wrong. And they have to respond verbally and say, I'm going to do it anyway because I hate God and I hate the religion. That person, who is such a terrible Jew, who feels that they want to do something to hurt the Ribbono Shel Olam, and they're doing it not because their Yetzer Hara got the better of them, but because they want, in spite, to get the Ribbono Shel Olam, that person, when they're in the Bezdin getting lashes 40 times, the Talmud Chacham stands there and says, oi, what are we going to do? How are we going to lighten the load of this person who's getting 40 lashes? Let's figure out how to make it only 39. That's a Talmud Chacham. That's what it means to be a Gavra Rabba. Talmud Chacham Gavra Rabba doesn't mean somebody who knows how to make a drasha from a pasuk. It's easy. Anyone can do that. Sfira Sa'omer, 50 days, you make it 49. Any of us can say that as well. Who's the Gavra Rabba? It's the person who knows that it takes someone who's laying on the floor in the Bezdin, being hit for what they deserve, and yet figures out how to make it, instead of 40, we're going to make it 39, because we need to lighten the load of even that person. Talmidei Chachamim, that's what the Gemara says, deserve more kavod than the Sefer Torah itself. So, now we get back to the discussion here, and that is the first very relevant and important issue that we need to talk about when we enter into the laws and to the issues that govern a Beis HaKnesses is, what's the halacha with regard to eating in a Beis HaKnesses? So we have a comment in the Talmud Yerushalmi. Talmud Yerushalmi in Masechah Sanhedrin writes, every so often the Bezdim would get together, they would be Mekadesh the Chodesh, they would be Ma'abar the Shana. So this was a very exciting event. When they were Ma'abar the Shana, it was an unusual occurrence. Everyone would come together, and after they finished making the Psak, whether they were going to extend an extra month onto the year, the Gemara says they would sit down in the local shul. They didn't have a separate Bezdin office. The Bezdin got together in the shul. They would sit down in the shul, and they would have a Seuda. That's what the Talmud Yerushalmi writes. So much so that the Yerushalmi Maseches Psachim, totally unrelated to the sugya, but the Gemara tells us in Psachim, where do I have to do Bedikas Chametz? Everywhere in the house? Everywhere that I own? No. No. The only place I have to do Bedikas Chametz is a Makom Shemachnisim Al Chametz. Only a place where there's a possibility that maybe I brought Chametz. So for example, if I have cabinets all the way on top where I keep my Pesach dishes, do I have to be Bedik Chametz there Erev Pesach? Of course not. Why? Because who would ever bring chametz up there? You only have to be bodek chametz where there's a consideration that maybe chametz was brought into that location. So the Gemara has a discussion, do I have to be bodek chametz in the Beis HaKnesses? Who in their right mind is going to ever eat in a shul? Says the Talmud Yerushalmi, no, it's a makom shemachnisim chametz. Why? Because we know that when they were ma'abed shana, they all used to come around and they would have some kind of tikkun, whatever they would have. They would have some kichel and herring, and they would have a suda after they were ma'abr the shana. And therefore, since it's a makom shemachnisim chametz, therefore we have to be bodek chametz on Erev Pesach. Now, the Shulchan Aruch actually writes, based on that when you have a suda's mitzvah, you're allowed to use the Beis HaKnesses for a suda's mitzvah. Along comes the Magen Avraham, he says, slow down. What are we talking about there? That's where you have great Yirei Shamayim, great Talmidei Chachamim coming together to be Ma'abar the Shana. So you have the grand Bezdin coming together. After they're finished, they sit down and they have a very simple meal to be celebrating that which they just made a psak on. How can you extrapolate from there that when we come to shul every Shabbos, we can do all kinds of things? We can have a Kiddush in the shul, we can have Shalosh Shudas in the shul, and a Yartzeit Suda in the back. Doesn't make sense, says the Magen Avraham. If you're the Bezdin, and your great Yirei Shamayim, and all you're serving is a little seltzer and some herring, and that's it. So then, of course, you can have that in the shul. But that doesn't apply to anyone else, says the Magen Avraham. How can you take from that to our situation today? And that's why it's important to get into the discussion, what is the justification? As we know, many people who have yartzeit bring in a tikkun. They don't always put it outside in the hallway. Sometimes they put it in the back of the shul. That's most convenient for everyone. On their way out, they're going to get something to eat. Is that justifiable? Are we allowed to do that? Or perhaps not. And we know many shuls don't have a separate room where they're going to have shalosh shudas. They move a couple of tables around, they have shalosh shudas in the back. Are you allowed to do that? Or perhaps not. Let's learn together the Gemara Maseches Megillah. The Gemara Maseches Megillah taught us that you have to have a certain mode of conduct when it comes to a Beis HaKnesses. But now the Gemara Maseches Megillah, Daf Chaf Ches, if you look here, number 9, the Gemara tells us the following. And this can be broken down into three different segments, which is why there's a space in between each one of them. The Gemara here says two halachos in a row, and then the third is a story. So let's see. Amar Avasi. Gemara Megillah Chavches tells us, Amar Avasi, Batei Knesio Sheva Bavel. All of the shuls that were constructed, all the shuls that were built outside of Eretz Yisrael, Bavel is just one example, but outside of Eretz Yisrael, Al Hatnai Heim Asuyim. The assumption is they were all built with a Tanai. What does a Tanai mean? It means you stipulated when you built it, and you stipulated that it's not only going to be used for davening, we're going to use it for a multi-purpose room. That is the assumption. Every shul that's built in Chutz La'aretz is built with that assumption. Okay. That doesn't mean we should be acting inappropriately in the shul, but it does mean that when we have a scenario that requires us to use the shul for something else, we would be allowed to do so. That's halacha number one. Halacha number two, says the Gemara, Amar Rava, Chachamim v'talmidehem, if you have a Talmud Chacham, he is allowed to eat in the shul. Why? To Amar Rabbi Shuvan Levi, my Bei Rabbanan, what does it mean when we call a Beis Medrash a Bei Rabbanan? It means Beis HaDeRabbanan. It's the house of the rabbis. That's where they spend all the time learning. And therefore, we allow the rabbis to have something to eat in the Beis Medrash. Number three, the Gemara tells a story that Ravina v'Ravada bar Masna were once sitting and talking and learning together, and they were asking a question of their teacher, Rava. Asa zilcha demitra, all of a sudden it started raining outside. Aili lebe knishta, and suddenly all three of them ran inside of the shul. Why? Why? They didn't want to get wet. Okay, says the Gemara, Amri, hi darlin lebe knishta, they made an announcement. One second, don't think we're going into the shul just because we didn't want to get wet. That doesn't justify somebody going into a shul. You go into a shul if you have something to do there. To go into a shul just because it's raining outside? No. The reason we went in is because Mishum deshmaitza b'itz lusa. Because in order to talk and learning, in order to learn properly, you have to have a clear head. Right now, we can't concentrate when we're getting all wet. So we didn't come inside because we were afraid of ruining our clothing or getting wet. No, that's not a right reason to go into shul. The reason we came into shul is because we want to be able to concentrate as we are talking and learning with our teacher, Rebbe. Fine, that's the Gemara story here. Now we have a problem with the story. What's the problem? Two problems. Number one, the Gemara just said, if you're a Talmud Chacham, you're allowed to use the shul for your own purposes. You're allowed to eat in the shul. So if a Talmud Chacham is allowed to use the shul for his own purposes, why weren't they allowed to go in just for the rain itself? Why do they have to give a whole explanation? No, we went in not because of the rain. We went in because we want to pay attention to the learning. Can't pay attention to the learning because it's so wet outside. No. Say it very simply. We went inside because we are Talmidei Chachamim, and this is our home. And when a Talmud Chacham comes to his home, this is what he's allowed to do. That's number one. Number two, didn't the first Gemara here say that when we have a shul that's outside of Eretz Yisrael, all of them are made al ha-tanai? What does that mean? It means we stipulated when building the shul that if we need the shul for any other purpose, we're allowed to use it for that, as long as it's not an inappropriate purpose. So what's the problem? Even if they weren't Talmidei Chachamim, these are Amorayim. The Amorayim didn't live in Eretz Yisrael, they lived in Chutz La'aretz. If that's the case, they were living in Bavel. The Gemara addresses them and says, a shul that's built in Bavel is allowed to be used for other purposes, so why weren't they allowed to go into the shul? This story seems to contradict both of the other statements that the Gemara makes here. And the Beis Yosef quotes a three-way dispute among the Rishonim to explain how are you going to have an understanding into the story here. Reason number one, the first approach is given by the Or Zeruah. And he says, you're right, it's true that the shuls in Bavel were built a la Tanai. However, he says that that's only the shuls in Bavel. The second Gemara here that says that Talmidei Chachamim are allowed to go and use the shul, that's talking about even in Eretz Yisrael, where they're not built with a Tanai. So that's why the first two Gemaras are not a problem. However, he says that is true, and that would have been the justification for them to use the shul space, because number one, the Talmidei Chachamim, and they're allowed to. Number two, this is in Bavel and it's al ha-tanai. However, the Or Zeruah and the other Rishonim say, over here, they wanted to be machmir on themselves. They didn't stam use the shul for their own purposes. They never used the shul, even though they had every right to. They never used to be mevaza the shul. They never used to eat in the shul, nothing. However, they came a situation here where they had to talk and learning, so then they went into the shul. But that was really a chumrah. And that's why the story does not contradict the original Gemara. The second approach in the Rishonim is the approach of the Ramban. Look at number 11 here. Writes the Ramban here as follows. While it's true that you're allowed to use a shul that's built al-Tanai, While it's true that a Talmud Chacham is allowed to eat inside of a shul, however, writes the Ramban, this is only b'shas hadchak. This is only when you have no other option. But when there is another way around it, why would you use a shul? Why would you use this heter? Says the Ramban, that this is something that is limited only to a situation of shas hadchak. Number three, we have the position of the Balei HaTosis. That's number 13 here, where the Balei HaTosis write a very different approach. And this third approach is something that is not similar at all to what the other Rishonim say. Writes the Balei HaTosis, no. When does the Gemara say that a shul in Babel is built al Atanai and you're allowed to use it for other purposes? That's only when I have a shul that's destroyed in Chutz Laaretz, that's no longer being used. That's the only time it's built al Atanai and I can use it for myself. But writes the Balei HaTosis, if the shul is functioning, so then you would not be allowed to use it for your own purposes, even in Chutz Laaretz. That's what the Balei HaTosis say. And the Balei HaTosis draw a distinction here, and they say, if I have a shul in Eretz Yisrael that's in disrepair, so you're telling me I'm not allowed to use that for other purposes? What? No, the Gemara here says only the shuls in Bavel were built al Atanai.
Right.
Tosis reinterprets and he says, no, al Atanai doesn't mean while the shul is in service you're allowed to use it. It means once the shul is already dilapidated, no one's going to use it anymore, so then you're allowed to use it for your own purposes. But if the shul is functioning, you can't use it.
Right.
Yeah. No. And in Eretz Yisrael, let's say I have a destroyed shul in Eretz Yisrael, you're allowed to use it or not?
You shouldn't be able to use it.
You should not?
Yes.
Why not? I mean, that's what the Gemara says, but why? What's the promise of destroyed shul? Tosis distinguishes and he says, no, you're right. Big difference. Why? Because when Mashiach comes, we're all going to use that shul in Eretz Yisrael. We're not going to have enough shuls. Ask the Magen Avram, what about our shul here? When Mashiach comes, the Gemara does say in Megillah Daf Chavtes, all the Batei Knesios are going to go to Eretz Yisrael, whatever that means, I don't know exactly, but writes the Magen Avram, then what's the difference? In the end of the day, every dilapidated shul in the United States is also going to go to Eretz Yisrael. So then why should there be a difference here between a shul that's built here and a shul that's built in Eretz Yisrael? It should all be the same. Chassam Sofer deals with the question. Everybody has their own explanations here to explain why there should be a distinction. Whatever it is, this is what Tosis writes, that we draw a distinction only between a dilapidated shul in Chutz Laaretz and a dilapidated shul in Eretz Yisrael. If you have a functioning shul in Chutz Laaretz, writes the Balei HaTosis, you think you have a right to use the shul for your own purposes? Absolutely not. You can't eat in a shul. It's a functioning shul. It's a Beis HaKnesses. The Gemara says clearly, Beis HaKnesses is miucha l'tfila. There are certain behaviors that are not allowed there. And therefore, the Balei HaTosis are very firm in their opinion. The Magen Avraham asks another question, and he says, I don't understand. The Gemara tells us that when you build a Beis HaKnesses, you're even allowed to make a t'nai on the Aron Kodesh. What's a t'nai? I need a place to put the Sefer Torah. Right now, we ordered an Aron Kodesh from wherever it is in Israel, Kibbutz Lavi. It's going to take 6 months to come in, till they produce it, till they get it over on the boat, whatever. It's going to take a while. So until that time, what do? We put a cabinet here. But I don't want to give up my cabinet. As soon as the Aron Kodesh comes back, I'm going to take my cabinet back to my house and put my clothing in there. But you're not allowed to use an Aron Kodesh for your own purposes. So the Gemara says, when I donated the cabinet, I make a t'nai, I stipulate that I don't want this to be for the long term. Right now, the shul needs a place to keep the Aron, so I'm donating a cabinet. But this is not something I want to be kept as Kedushas Aron Kodesh. So the Shulchan Aruch says, that's acceptable. You're allowed to make it t'nai. So the Magen Avraham asks, I don't understand. You're allowed to make it t'nai when you donate a cabinet for an Aron Kodesh. And once the Aron Kodesh is no longer being used, you're allowed to take the cabinet back. But you're telling me that you're not allowed to make it t'nai when you build a shul? A shul is less Kodesh than an Aron Kodesh. So how do you explain that? So this is a big discussion in the Achronim. How do you deal with this opinion of the Tosis? But the bottom line is, there's a three-way dispute among the Rishonim. How do we interpret the story of these two Amoraim? Why did they feel that they had to give a justification for going into the shul? Weren't they allowed to go in anyway? Or Zaruah writes, the answer is because you're right. Of course it was mutter, but they wanted to be machmer for themselves. The other Rishonim, the Ramban, says the reason why is because the only time we have an allowance to use a shul for your own purposes is when you have a shas hadchak, when you have an emergency, when there's no other way around it. But in a normal situation, you wouldn't be allowed to use the shul. And they felt being stuck in the rain is not a major emergency. So you get wet, it's okay. And that's why they had to give the answer. The only reason they went into the shul is because they wanted to learn. Answer number three, says the Balei HaTosis, is you're never allowed to use a shul for your own purposes. The Gemara says that the shuls and Chutz Laaretz are built al Atanai. Yeah, that just means it's built al Atanai. Once it's destroyed, you're allowed to then use it. But while the shul is in use and it's being functioning as a Beis HaKnesses, that would not be something that is permissible. Yeah? Oh, so Tosis, if you learn here through the Tosis, he goes through the whole story. He tries to explain everything here. And I just want to stick to the point that we're trying to get to here. Now, what's the halacha l'maisa? So we have a three of Machlokes HaRishon. Arzarua, Ramban, Balei HaTosis. You look in the Shulchan Aruch, and surprisingly, the Shulchan Aruch adopts the opinion of the Balei HaTosis, which is the most extreme position. Balei HaTosis say you're not allowed to use a shul for anything, unless the shul is already destroyed and not in use anymore. But otherwise, you would not be allowed to. So the question is, if the Shulchan Aruch says that, so how do we justify why it is that we, in all of our shuls, use the shul for a kiddush, use it for a sheva brachas, we use it for a shalosh shudas and for a yardside suda and everything? How are we allowed to do that? It's a shul. And in Shulchan Aruch, we paskin like Rabbeinu Tam, like the Balei HaTosis, which say that a tanai does not help for a shul. It doesn't take away the kedusha of a shul just because you stipulated at the time of the building of the shul. So how do you explain that? How do we justify the minhag ha'olam? The entire Jewish world has this practice that they use the shul for their own purposes when it needs to be done. So there are three basic positions to explain what it is that we do here. The Bir Halacha is the first one. Bir Halacha explains as follows, and he says, the way to understand it is, in the beginning of Hilchos Shabbos, the Shulchan Aruch in Siman Reish Samach Tes quotes a passage from the Gemara Maseches Pesachim, Daf Kuf Aleph. What does the Gemara say there? The Gemara says every Friday night, we say Kiddush and Shul. Why do we say Kiddush and Shul? Asks the Gemara. The Gemara says because we have guests who come to the town and need a place to eat. We have to provide them with food. So we give them an opportunity to eat a local meal in the shul, but we have to say Kiddush for them. They don't have wine, so we're going to have one communal Kiddush, and then they all sit down to eat. Wow, so the Rishonim say, oh, sit down to eat? What do you mean? How's everybody eating in shul? Doesn't the Gemara say you're not allowed to eat in the shul? So some Rishonim say, no, it doesn't mean they ate in the shul. It means there was a little room that was adjacent to the shul that had a door connecting it. So we make Kiddush in the shul because there are people who are going to be eating right next door that we want them to hear the Kiddush before all of us leave. That's the answer that some Rishonim give. Other Rishonim say, no. The Gemara says that the Orchim, that the Aniyim, ate in the shul. So why would you assume that that means anything other than what it says? The Aniyim ate in the shul. So the answer is, the Rishonim say, they actually ate in the shul. Why? Because it was Shashas Adchak. Where else are we going to send them? People didn't used to have big dining rooms where they can invite all the guests over. They didn't have that. The only local place where people can get together and actually have a meal around the table that was not only for their own family was in the shul. So they used to use the shul because it was a Shas Adchak. Right, the Bir Halacha. If you look in Shulchan Aruch and Hilchos Shabbos, he quotes that Halacha and he says, on Friday night we make Kiddush in shul. That means he believes, like the other Rishonim, that B'Shas Adchak, you're allowed to use a shul. Now says the Bir Halacha, that means that when I have a Shas Adchak, I'm allowed to use the shul. So now the question becomes, how do I define what's considered extenuating circumstances? A yard site, tikkun in the back of shul, is that extenuating circumstances?
Probably.
What?
Probably not.
I don't know. Shalosh shudas in the shul, is that extenuating circumstances? So how are you going to draw the line? The sheva brachas in the shul, how do you draw the line? The Gemara says, and the Shulchan Aruch quotes it, when you have aniyim who have to eat in the shul, so we let them eat in the shul, of course we're going to let them eat there. Even though it's not right, but what are you supposed to do? They need a place to eat. So how do you define a shas adchak? Rav Moshe here writes something fascinating. Look at number 15. Rav Moshe goes in a tshuva to explain what is the definition of a shas adchak, of extenuating circumstances when it comes to this issue of eating in the shul. Writes Rav Moshe as follows. Kim dumani sheberharmi mekomos nogin lahakel af shelo b'shas adchak. Rav Moshe says, it seems to me that many communities are lenient about this issue of eating in a shul, even when it's not such an emergency. It's not that we have a bunch of poor people in town who have nowhere to eat. Nah, says Rav Moshe, we've seen that many people are makel just when they want to have a shalosh shudas, when they want to have tikkun in the back of shul. What's this about? Letzorach mitzvah ksas. He says, even for a small mitzvah, we allow it as well. Skip down a few lines. HaChasidim noagim achol batik nesiyo shalahen. We picked up the minig of the Chasidim, and that is, in all the shtiblach, they are lahatir af bedavar harashus mamish kahada achilu shtia b'yama yartzeit, says Rav Moshe. What's the inyan of having a tikkun on a yartzeit? Okay, a nice idea, it's a chasidish minig, but he said there's no mitzvah in that. It's a nice thing to do. Says Rav Moshe, we're going to allow even that in the shul. Imkein mechrachim lomar Therefore, writes Rav Moshe, it seems, Shenoagim Kirashi B'Shem Har Zarua, it seems that we paskan like Rashi, that therefore, when you have a situation where a shul is in Chutz La'aretz and it was built Talat Tanai, you're allowed to use it for your own purposes. That's the way it is. I, writes Rav Moshe, in Shulchan Aruch, they paskin like the Bali Atosis who said that a shul cannot be used for anything at all. Rav Moshe says it seems that history evolved and we have rejected the position of the Shulchan Aruch. Fascinating. It's a fascinating tshuva of Rav Moshe, where he says, Minhag Olam seems to be that even though you look in the Shulchan Aruch, he accepted the position of the Bali Atosis that you are not allowed to use a shul to eat at all. Obviously, says Rav Moshe, we have now reevaluated the whole situation and we no longer paskin like that. Interesting. You ever heard of such a thing? I find that a very interesting tshuva.
Sometimes it's established that way.
What?
Halacha sometimes established that way. But
exactly. But I find that to be a fascinating conclusion. And this is something that, in truth, Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach writes about as well. Reb Shlomo Zalman says, if you look here, number 19, the Halicha Shlomo, Shlomo Zalman says, that even when you have a Beis HaKnesses in Eretz Yisrael, also he says, we know that very often the situation is that people eat in the shul. How could it be? So he says, because the shuls are all built with the assumption that they're going to be used for shalashudas, they're all going to be used for certain things, and that would not be considered a violation of what the Pesach and Shulchan Aruch actually is. Fascinating Piskei Halacha here. The second position to explain why it is that we're makel for people to eat in a shul, even though the Shulchan Aruch seems to say it's usher, is something that sounds like such a tremendous chiddush. Honestly, I don't even feel comfortable saying it because it doesn't resonate with me at all. There's so much that sounds wrong about it. But this is a tshuva in the Divrei Chaim. The Divrei Chaim was the great Sanze Rav. And the Divrei Chaim suggests the following. He says, I have a way around it. What's the way around it? Way around it is, when we build a shul, we're not going to call it a Beis HaKnesses. Not going to call it a Beis HaKnesses. What?
Call it a shtibel.
A shtibel. We're going to call it, you know what they used to call it in Europe?
A
klois. Why, isn't it strange? Why do they call it a klois? Yerber Chaim said, no, there was a reason for that. We wanted the Rebbe's house to be the shtibel. Why? Because really, it's my home. It's my shtub. It's my house. It's my klois. We happens to be, we daven here sometimes. So if it's really my house, I can do whatever I want in my house. And because the way it was constructed, the way it was originally established was that it should just be my house, and then 500 Hasidim come to daven along with me every day, it just so happens. So therefore he says it has no Kedushas Beis HaKnesses, and it's not a problem to eat in there. What's the problem? So the problem is, the Dvar Yeshua, other Achronim say, how can that be? That's insane. How can you say such a thing? That means you're never going to shul to daven. That's like davening in my basement. So you go to a place that's not a makom kadosh. You go to a shul that was not designated as a shul. You're davening in the Rebbe's house just because you want to get out of the problem. How about go to a shul and don't eat in there? That's the right answer. So this whole Divrei Chaim is something that's very surprising. Minchas Yitzchak has a whole tshuva about it where he doesn't like it either. But he says this was the minig of many Hasidish Rebbe's, that they didn't want to have any issue with the Hasidim eating in shul. And the way they got around it was they built their own house, and then they used the house without a Kedushas Beis HaKnesses, they used the house for whatever purposes they need. And finally, Rabbi Avadi Yosef answers the Shaila a little bit differently, and he says, the answer can be as follows. The Shulchan Aruch says, let's say I have a security guard in the shul. Security guard needs to eat something during the day. So what are we going to tell him? Every time you need to get something to eat or to drink, you have to walk out, then the shul is not going to be secure. So the Shulchan Aruch says, obviously, if it's for the sake of the Beis HaKnesses, he's allowed to eat in the shul. That's not a Bizayin Beis HaKnesses. He's looking after the shul. Of course he has to take a drink along the way if he's standing there the whole day. So the Shulchan Aruch says, whenever I have a situation where it's Litzarech Beis HaKnesses, it would then be permissible for me to go ahead and eat in the shul itself. And therefore, Rabbi Avadia says that this is all Tzarech Beis HaKnesses. To have a Shalashudas in the shul is part of the need of a shul. To have an opportunity to have a tikkun in the back of the shul, that's part of the rhythm of a shul. To go out of our way and do something extra on the shul is not part of the rhythm of the shul, and that would not be allowed. So let's say, to use the shul for a graduation, or something of that nature, may not be permissible. Somebody asked me yesterday that one of the local schools wants to make their graduation, they need a bigger space, so they want to use the conservative temple, because it's a very large space. I think Temple Beth El, I think on West Broadway, I think has a lot of space there. So, no, not West Broadway, on Broadway. So they wanted to know whether they're allowed to use it. So I asked my father, he said he doesn't see anything wrong. That's not a shul. So if it's not a shul, so it's not a problem. But to use a real Beis HaKnesses as a makom kadosh that's then going to be used for Dvarim Shechol, he thought would be problematic. And that's something that certainly should not be done. So the Netziv adds, the Rabbi Avad Yosef adds from the Netziv, he says, certainly, if you're going to have a get-together and someone's going to say Divrei Torah Chalashudas, someone's going to have a Siyum and they're going to talk Dvarim Shebekdusha, then certainly there's no problem at all. That's the same as the Talmidei Chacham who got together and were Ba'aba the Shana when they used to have a Suda after they were done. Either way, the Gemara says in Maseches Megillah Daf Chavches, Chachamim v'Talmideihon Mutarim. The Gemara says that when you have Talmidei Chachamim, they are allowed to eat in the shul. Why? What's the reason? Some Rishonim say the reason why is because Talmidei Chachamim who came to learn in yeshiva didn't have a place to sleep. This is where they slept. This is where they ate. It's not like people had big houses where they were able to host them. Once in a while, they went to a local house and they got a hot bowl of soup, but otherwise they stayed in the yeshiva the whole week. There was nowhere to go. So therefore, the Rishonim say, what are you going to say? We shouldn't have any yeshivas because the people aren't allowed to eat. So if they're not allowed to eat here, where are they going to go? So that's what some Rishonim explain. So the Shulchan Aruch says, in the name of the Rambam, that the only time that you're allowed to have Talmidei Chacham eat in a shul is when it is a Shas Hadchak. Now the Mishnah Berurah says, a Shas Hadchak means, if they're going to interrupt their learning, that's a Shas Hadchak. For them to go out and have to eat somewhere else, that would be a Shas Hadchak. So does that mean, the Mishnah Berurah asks, does that mean that anybody who's ever learning now has a right to eat in the shul? I don't think we all consider ourselves Talmidei Chacham. But right now we're learning Torah. For us to go have a drink, we would have to walk out and have a drink somewhere else. But that's going to be Mevatel Torah. So can I consider myself a Talmud Chacham in that regard? That at least I don't have to stop my learning and be Mevatel Torah in order to be allowed to eat in the shul. So this is an interesting question. The Mishnah Berurah himself is very machmer. The Mishnah Berurah says here, it's only for someone who is a full-time learner. Only somebody who's Torah Seum Naso, and this is his life, this is where he spends his time. He has a right to use the shul for eating and drinking. But others, somebody happens to be learning, maybe not. If you look here on the bottom in number 23, you will see in the Sefer Tzedakah U'Mishpat where he writes otherwise. Tzedakah U'Mishpat is a Sefer written by Rav Bloy, who was a great Talmud Chacham in Yerushalayim. He passed away in the last couple of years. My father loves to talk about his Svarim. He wrote an amazing Sefer on Ribbis, a lot of Chosha Mishpat, complicated issues, but he wrote beautiful Svarim on that. Why is that the case? Because, if I'm not mistaken, he worked in Pagi Bank. Poalei Agudas Yisrael, right? There was a bank in Israel called Pagi. So he was one of the tellers, one of the clerks in the bank. And people used to come and do banking things, whatever they do in a bank. And sometimes they would be waiting online and they would strike up a conversation with him. And somebody from the Eina Charedis realized, this man is a tremendous Talmud Chacham. What's he doing in the bank? So they finally hijacked him from the bank and they brought him. He became a dayan in the Eina Charedis. And he wrote amazing svarim. And that is the story of Rav Bloy. He has very, very beautiful svarim. So one of his svarim, he writes this passage here. Yesh omrim, shakal makam limudo v'shas limudo mutar lecha b'lishtos behem. If I'm in the middle of learning, it doesn't mean that I have to be a major Talmud Chacham. After all, we find many other places in Shulchan Aruch where we assume ein din Talmud Chacham is man hazeh. We assume our definition of Talmidei Chachamim is not what it used to be. For example, in Baba Kama, I think it's a Yerushalmi in Baba Kama, I don't remember, but the Yerushalmi says that if somebody is mevaza Talmud Chacham, we give him a knas. We give him a very high penalty. You ever heard of anybody? All the time, people scream at the rabbi, right? So what, you scream at the rabbi, we're going to send a knas to your house and tell you you have to pay a ticket? No such thing. So why not? The Yerushalmi says, someone is mevaza Talmud Chacham, that's what you do. Now we have people writing articles against the rabbi, people have been on Twitter on against the rabbi, everything, right? We don't send the knas. We don't do anything, actually. So why not? So the answer is, because the Rama says, we don't have the kind of Talmidei Chacham. Okay, your rabbi's a nice guy. Okay, very nice. But he's not a Talmud Chacham like the way that Yerushalmi is describing a Talmud Chacham. So it's not the right thing to do. You shouldn't be mevaza anyone. And you shouldn't say bad things about other people. But we're going to send a knas to your house because you're mevaza Talmidei Chachamim. I don't think our Talmidei Chachamim rise to the level of what the Yerushalmi is describing as a great Talmud Chacham, which is a major question today. We know the Gemara in Maseches Bracha says when you meet a great Talmud Chacham, you're supposed to make a special bracha, shechalak mechachmasa li'reyav. Special bracha that's reserved for great Talmidei Chachamim. So the question is, do we make that bracha today or not? Some say, well, we don't have Talmidei Chachamim like they had in the times of the Gemara. Others say, what does it matter? Somebody who we consider to be on a stature of a great Talmud Chacham, who's greater than we are, so okay, so you make the bracha because we celebrate the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us great leaders of our generation. Granted, they're not like the Tanoim and the Amoraim and the Rishonim, but still, we have leaders in our generation who can lead us. Anyway, here, that's the question that he's discussing. I have to be a major Talmud Chacham learning all day in order to be allowed to eat in the shul, or I could just be a person who happens to be learning right now. I'm exhausted by the shir, so I want to bring a coffee into the shir. I'm not allowed to do that. So he writes on the bottom here. Magen Avraham writes, Kedei Shalo Yizbat Lemi Limuda. Writes the Magen Avraham. Why is the Talmud Chacham allowed to eat in the middle of shul? In the middle of Beis Medrash, because we don't want him to be Mevatel Torah. If he's going to have to go out and drink the coffee outside, he's going to stand outside for 10 minutes. Aval Amein Lom Demachshav Asurim L'shitazu. And then he says the last line, Afilu Misha Ena Talmud Chacham. Kol B'shas Limuda Mutter. The bottom line is, if the reason why we justify this practice is because we don't want to be Mevatel Torah, then says Rav Bloy, why would we say that it should be any different if somebody is not a major Talmud Chacham? The bottom line is, by him going outside to have the food, to have the snack, to have the coffee in the middle, he's going to have to be Mevatel Torah to do so. And therefore, in order to save that Bittel Torah, we would say that is a good enough reason to allow the person to eat inside of the shul and not to have to step out. So, Amir Tashem.